Well, you want to get started? Because I feel like we're going to have a lot to talk about.
Yes, let's do it.
Balls, a supernatural podcast with Lizzie and Missy.
Hi, Liz.
Hello, Miss.
How, really? Someone just blooped in the middle of that?
I'm just going to close out of there.
I did close out of it. Still blooped.
Oh, you know what? It picks and chooses.
Maybe I need to quit it.
Let's kick it to the curb.
I'm quitting it. Okay, there we go. No more bloops, hopefully.
No more bloops.
How are you doing today, Liz?
Oh, I'm living.
Oh, the dream. I know.
Someone's, not mine. That's for sure.
Exactly. It's someone else's dream.
Definitely not a gin, that's for sure.
Oh.
Giving me a lot better stuff to be working with.
For real. I feel ya. Well, I'm super excited today about this episode, and I feel like we should just jump into it, unless there was something that you wanted to chat about before, but I didn't have anything, so.
Nope. I mean, I feel like there's not too much to talk about. I'm just sitting here with my water and my hot chocolate and my Harry Potter candle, just having setting the mood for this podcast.
I love it. I have my, what does my shirt say? Just a little bit of Hocus Pocus shirt, so I wore my Halloween-y shirt today for a ghosty episode.
I have Scare House. I have my Scare House hoodie casting on. And then underneath, I have James Bond, so I'm just going to zip it up. But yeah, I'm just sitting here drinking out of my child mug that Dustin's mom got me because we celebrated Christmas yesterday.
I like it.
Quarantine.
Better late than never.
Yeah, and in case you're curious, it's a color-changing candle that sorts you into your house, the Harry Potter candle, not the child, because he's...
I was going to say,
different genres. We're crossing Star Wars and
Hold
Harry
on a
Potter.
Minute.
In case you're curious, I'm Gryffindor. It's rad.
Oh, I like it. So cool. Yeah. And just so you know, I was following what you were saying.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to use the mouse that's not attached to my computer again because I'm a horrible person. Let me try not to burn myself and my house down.
Yeah, okay.
Harry Potter.
Ooh. No,
you can't tell, but it's red underneath. It's
I saw a little bit of red in the bloop. Inside.
And if you really want to know, it's Gryffindor.
Very cool.
Yeah, I'm a nerd.
We're all nerds, aren't we?
Yes. I mean, I guess this leads into fandoms, and this one deals with a fandom that has grown so big. So big.
So let's just get, what episode are we talking about?
We are going to be talking about season 3, episode 13, because why wouldn't it be lucky number 13? 13 ghosts, maybe? For ghost facers.
Yes.
I feel like I can't say ghost facers without doing that.
You can't. You have to do the theme song. That's just how it works.
Like, I try, but then in the back of my mind, even in my head, I'm just like, ghost facers.
Ghost facers. I was making lunch today, and I literally was singing it nonstop until I started to eat. Like, we talked about, like, recording, and then I was like, ghost facers.
Well, you obviously didn't get out of the kitchen because when the kitchen got hot.
I didn't. No, I did not.
So that's good. But, so this episode aired April 24th, 2008.
Yeah, it took us off of our streak.
It did, because this was actually the one that was supposed to be released on the day that Use and Bello came out. And it was not. And it takes place in Appleton, Wisconsin.
Sounds like a lovely little town.
It just makes me think of like a charcuterie board.
Yes.
Like cheese and apples.
Yeah, and you have a little salami on there.
Yeah.
I like it. Some grapes. I like a good charcuterie board.
Yeah, my friend's actually making one right now. She messaged me and told me that I need to chaperone her next time because she spent $100 on cheese. And she's not ashamed, but that's not the most she spent the money on. It was actually alcohol.
I feel like you could go crazy on some good cheeses and end up spending.
Well, I feel like that's also a problem because cheese ain't cheap.
No.
Especially all the ones that they bring in.
Yeah.
You want to give me a plot for ghost facers?
Yeah, sorry.
I was trying to think of where we were. I was like, I already did we're in Appleton, Wisconsin.
I know.
It came later than it should have.
And we charcuterie boarded.
That sounds like a really awkward torture.
Instead of waterboarding, you were charcuterie boarded?
Is that just when you eat too much charcuterie?
When they just keep giving you all the cheeses.
And then you get some mustard in there and a lot of jams.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it could be a good way to go. I don't know.
There are worse ways.
Exactly. Okay. So Sam and Dean investigate the haunted Morton House in Appleton, Wisconsin, and come across supernatural enthusiasts Harry Spangler and Ed Zedmore. They're shooting the pilot for the reality show Ghost, Ghost Facers, along with Ed's adopted sister, Maggie, not sure why this is important, gay intern Corbett, and cameraman Spruce.
Maybe it's because that plays really big into the ending to get him to cross over and help them out.
I know, but just to label him as gay intern Corbett just didn't seem right.
I feel like he should have just been intern Corbett.
Intern Corbett, yeah. I'm just reading what the Wikipedia said, so not my words.
Wikipedia is just throwing it on out there.
For real. According to legend, the spirit of Freeman Daggett returns every leap year to bring more victims to the house. The group comes across a ghost reliving his death, which the Winchesters call a harmless, quote-unquote, death echo. Corbett soon disappears, and the rest are unable to escape before midnight. The spirit locks the house down, trapping its inhabitants. In their search for Corbett, they come across the home office of Daggett, the janitor of the local hospital. He used to bring home Corpus.
Were you trying to mix Corbett and corpses together?
I think so. And a little bit of morgue in there. I don't know. He used to bring home corpses from the morgue to quote-unquote play with. Sam suddenly vanishes and finds himself with Corbett, both tied to chairs at a birthday party setup. The spirit appears and kills Corbett, then places a party hat onto Sam's head. As Dean enters the bomb shelter that is holding Sam, I don't like that. As Dean enters the bomb shelter where Sam is, the others place themselves in a circle of salt, a ghost deterrent, and watch a death echo of Corbett. Ed, who Corbett was in love with, talks Corbett out of the death echo. His spirit confronts Daggett, putting him to rest. Before departing the next day, Sam and Dean wipe all of the Ghost Facers footage with an electromagnet.
The birthday party thing reminded me a lot of Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Mm-hmm.
When they all have to sit down and then you find out that, he didn't kill Eddie there, but you find out that they're eating Eddie.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
If you haven't seen...
First off, if you haven't seen Rocky Horror Picture Show, I don't know if you're going to watch it, but you should.
Yeah.
And two, it's been out a while.
A long, long time.
Let's just be honest, but
longer than I have been alive. Wait, I think.
It came out in 1975.
Oh, definitely longer than I've been alive.
Yeah, it was. But that's what that made me think of.
Yeah.
And also in going back and rewatching it and after doing some of my research, I cannot help to think this is the weird bastard child. If Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures did the horizontal mambo and just plopped out a web series.
If they had a baby, it would be this show.
Because there are definitely instances with the van and how it shot from down below that are definitely more reminiscent of Ghost Hunters.
Yeah.
And I think that the opening and sometimes how they do their investigations is more Ghost Adventures.
I thought that too. I thought at the beginning where they're in the chairs or whatever and they're talking. First of all, I loved the yellow chucks with the tux and the ascot.
Oh, yes.
I love that in the opening. But then when he's holding the skull, I was like, I think I could see Zach Baggins holding a skull like that. And I was like, no, Zach Baggins has held a skull like that before.
I think he's held more than one.
It's happened. He's had that same pose in an opening to the show or at one point.
Well, and he also, his Dark Souls book, he's got that crushed black velvet suit with the top hat. And
uh-huh. They also were screaming at ghosts like Zach Baggins tends mm-hmm. to scream at ghosts.
I mean, they are kind of a little forceful.
Yeah.
Let's be honest here.
What about the slow motion walk at the beginning?
The not slow motion walk where
they were slow motioning.
Slow motion vomit. Slow motion vomit.
I like it.
Yeah, that was completely unnecessary, but I think that they just didn't have the slow-mo in the budget.
Oh, it definitely wasn't in the budget.
But they had the TAPS truck, aka the Ghost Facers truck, and they even had the drawing board.
Yeah. They even did the voiceovers was that in this or was this in the web series? I'm getting them confused now.
They didn't have the voiceovers in this episode.
Okay, it was in the web series then. That reminded me, I'll talk about that later, but it reminded me of, what was the Penn State one?
Oh, Paranormal State.
Paranormal State with that kid who'd be log, case, yes. Blah, 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 and then he'd do the voiceover.
Also, how about Dean rocking out to We're an American Band?
Yeah, so not inconspicuously driving past the house, by the way. There's no way that no one would have heard them. But I mean, are they ever really creeping up on anybody in the Impala? It's a pretty loud car.
Yeah, baby ain't quiet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like they were sneaking up to try and, like, get rid of the ghost or anything.
Yeah. But, I mean, if they're, like, staking out a place, like, driving past it, you know, they were... Maybe they should turn down the tunes.
You, can you turn down Burn American Band, though? It's Grand Funk Railroad.
You're right. I'm sorry. I take that back.
I mean, Rob Zombie did a cover.
I take it back.
Yeah. Okay, good. Also, how about the nickname for, like, their command center? It's not just, like, command center or, like, a nickname. It's Command Center 1 Eagle's Nest.
Eagle's Nest?
What? I'm sorry. If I have to communicate with you, I'm going to say your name. You're lucky if I'm going to say Eagle's Nest, let alone Command Center.
Do you think any of the little things that they said were ad-libbed?
Like, I would think so.
Like, there were two lone wolves. There was the Eagle's Nest. Spin the tires, light the fires.
Like, I'm pretty sure there's no way that Spruce, which by the Spruce, there's no way the Spruce, like, I don't know, 15th, 16th Jewish, 1/16th Cherokee, making him a shamanologist. I mean, if the writers wrote that, props to them. But if he made that up on his own, holy fuck.
That guy looked like Josh Gates. Like, if Josh Gates gained a little weight and left his hair, like, au natural, I think.
I could see that.
He would look like Josh Gates. But then there's, like, Chisel Chest and Facer Haters. Like, those are some pretty funny lines.
I think they just tried a bunch of funny nicknames to see what stuck.
Yeah. I want to see the outtakes. That's what I want to see. Outtakes from this episode.
I think Corbett was the real star of this episode, though.
He was. He was the hero.
He was the hero. He sacrificed himself for the greater good.
He did.
Without knowing it. Just like any intern cook would do. And by cook, I mean he did instant French vanilla coffee.
Because that's what Ed liked.
That is what Ed liked.
I like the way this episode was shot. Because it was shot like one of those ghosty shows that I love so much.
This one, it was really good because it kind of really starts and when they decide that they're going to do a themed episode, that they dive wholeheartedly into the themed episode.
Right.
Like, they knew going in that this wasn't just Supernatural. This was Ghost Facers in the Supernatural universe.
Right.
And therefore, it was shot the way that Ghost Facers would shoot it. Just like, can't remember the name of the episode because, I mean, I can describe it. It's the black and white Pennsylvania monster movie.
Yes.
Where that one was filmed very much like a classic monster movie, and it was in black and white, which obviously we'll get to.
We'll get there.
I mean, that's what, season 4, episode 5, so we're not too far away.
Oh, we're not that far away.
But this was the first time we really see them just like dive full-heartedly into like, hey, we're doing a themed episode-ish, which we'll see later also in Changing Channels and stuff.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked the way they did it.
That's because you like ghost shows.
I do. I love them. I don't know why, but I do. It's intriguing. I don't necessarily think that everything they do is, you know, factual, but it's good. Good entertainment for me.
Were you at all surprised about Maggie and Harry?
Oh, no. I had a dream like that, though, about Steve Gonzalez.
And you were Maggie?
Yeah, and he was, yeah.
Okay, I was like,
It was me and Steve. It wasn't...
Oh, okay. And was Tango like the one to find you?
No.
Okay. Did you feel bad at all when they wiped all of the things from Ghost Facers using their electromagnetic what looked like a bomb?
No, I didn't feel bad for them. I thought it was pretty ingenious, though. I didn't think that they would come up with that, but...
I mean, I don't know how much Dean had a hand in there, but...
Dean's hand was just putting it in the bag and leaving it there. I feel like Dean... that's all he had to do with it.
Dean, I think if he had his druthers, would have just, like, thrown it through a window. It seems like, no, you gotta be more inconspicuous. Put it in their bag.
And then ride into the sunset.
But they do say that they didn't think the show... Dean says he didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah, he kind of liked it a little bit.
And this really starts, like, the rivalry between the Ghost Facers and the Winchesters.
Ghost Facers! I like that when they swear that they put... First of all, I like that they swear. Because I feel like that's normally how Dean and Sam... you know, would talk. But I like how they put the skull mouth, like the Ghost Facer logo over their mouths whenever they were swearing.
I liked when they realized who they recognized.
Yeah.
When Sam's just like, holy
Yeah.
He's like, West Texas, like it's all slowly coming back. He's like, the Tulpa, you guys are the goofballs that almost got us fucking killed. I don't know the name of your show, but yeah, you guys.
Yeah, and then Dean was just like, fuck me. We gotta save these assholes again. But in the end, it was Corbett.
It was Corbett.
Corbett saving the day.
R.I.P. Corbett.
I know. Seriously. Corbett, poor Corbett didn't earn a full Ghostfacer status until he died.
What was nice is that that seemed to not only cross over Daggett, which I can't, I'm sorry, I just think of Angry Beavers. But it not only crossed over Daggett, but it also crossed over Corbett. It was a twofer.
A twofer.
Two for the price of one.
Corbett saving the day. Okie doke. I'm ready for tiddly bits if you're ready for tiddly bits.
I'm always ready for some tiddly bits, especially for this episode.
They're actually called tiddly bits this time and not titty bits. So, ooh. I know. Might disappoint some people, but this is where we're at. One of the things that keeps coming up in episodes, a wall hanging appeared again in this episode. The deer's head was back. It appeared on the wall of the Morton house. Did you notice the deer?
I did.
I did notice
the deer.
So it's back.
I'm now staring at things. Like, I saw the starburst in the motel room, and I was like, have I seen you before?
Have I seen her? The standard Supernatural opening credits do not air at the beginning of this episode. Instead, the credits for the show, in a show, Ghostfacers, air. The standard credits air at the end of the episode. This episode and the Ghostfacers in particular are a parody of the show Ghost Hunters, which was on the Sci-Fi Channel. The handheld camera style of this episode references the horror movie The Blair Witch Project, in which a group of college kids are making a documentary about a witch. So hit the nail right on the head there.
Yeah, I agree.
The framing mechanism of the episode Ghostfacers, Ed and Harry are suited up and sitting in front of a fire. It's reminiscent of the Masterpiece Theater, which would be introduced by the host who would be sitting in a great chair by an open fire. I feel like some of these things that I copied and pasted are a little redundant.
Maybe they just couldn't find it. They were so enamored with this episode.
Like, it's so great.
Just can't stop to listen and write my notes.
The Ghostfacers theme song is very reminiscent of the Ghostbusters theme, also having a line about who you're going to call. Furthermore, the Ghostfacers have a huddle cheer similar to the one used by the Ghostbusters.
I was really like, I mean, I guess if you're really stretching it, I didn't even think Ghostbusters with the theme song.
I didn't think so either.
But okay.
But probably just because it says, who are you going to call?
I mean, that's probably the one. If that's it, I'm here for it.
So if you wanted to know the lyrics, the lyrics to the Ghostfacer song, I have them here for you.
Oh, good, because we sang them more than once, so please,
but
let's get a chorus.
I'm not going to sing them this time. I'm just going to be spoken word.
Okay.
Oh, you want me to sing it?
I mean, I prefer it, but I don't want to pressure you into anything. You're a free woman to do with you what you choose.
Well, when we get to the middle part, I don't remember how it goes, so we'll just... Ghostfacers, we face the ghosts when the others will not. Ghostfacers, stay in the kitchen when the kitchen gets hot. Ghostfacers, we face the nightmare, we face the dread. Ghostfacers, we face the faceless, we face the dead. When you trip and fall into the supernatural, we're who you're gonna call, we face them all. Ghostfacers, we face the faceless, we face the dead. Face ghosts, ghost facers.
They say face ghosts.
Thank you. At the beginning of the episode, Ed Zedmore mentions a writer's strike. This writer's strike really did happen between November 5th, 2007 and February 12th, 2008. Because of this, majority of television shows had shorter seasons during this time, including Supernatural, which we've talked about for the past, three or four episodes. In fact, a mere two episodes before Supernatural Mystery Spot was actually intended to be the season finale if the strike had not been resolved. This was the first first episode filmed after the Writers Guild of America strike ended. There is a meta element to this episode, which, as an unscripted show, is the type of programming that was predicted to replace scripted dramas like Supernatural if the strike had continued. A poster of the indie horror movie Coven is seen in the Ghostfacers base. Excuse me. I was ghost-facing out this afternoon, and I kind of lost my voice there a little bit.
Oh, man. Were you just screaming too hard?
I was pretty metal this afternoon when I was ghost-facing.
I mean, I feel like you have to, because they do. They get pretty hard in that song.
That's what we're going to call it now, by the way. It's ghost-facing.
Yeah.
TM, 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 TM.
Write that down.
A poster for the indie horror movie Coven is seen in the Ghostfacers base. This poster is also seen framed at Charlie Bradbury's apartment in season 7, episode 20, The Girl with the Dungeon and Dragons Tattoo.
Charlie.
I love her.
She's the best.
John DeSantis plays the ghost Freeman Daggett. This is the first of many roles he has had on Supernatural. He also portrays the Golem in Supernatural Everybody Hates Hitler, which is all, I like that episode. The Scarecrow in Supernatural Fan Fiction, and Moloch in Supernatural The Memory Remains. Those are all down the road.
Yes.
The song playing as the Ghostfacers set up base camp in the Morton House is Hocus Pocus by Focus from 1971.
Yes.
Oh, and I'm wearing my Hocus Pocus shirt.
Oh, see, it ties right in.
It's like I planned it. Oh,
look at that.
Also, when they're in their the garage, like at Ed's house or whatever, when his dad opens the garage door and all the whiteboard and everything flies because it was all attached to it, that made me laugh. They find boxes of meal combat individual, and Maggie asks her these sea rations. In World War II, fresh foods cooked in a kitchen were called A rations. Canned foods cooked in a kitchen were B rations. Canned foods you took in the field were C rations. In 1958, those C rations were replaced by canned meal combat individual. All that canned stuff was cooked and could be eaten straight from the can. Since 1980s, soldiers have received pre-cooked meals, ready-to-eat meals, or MREs, in Mylar bags. Have you ever had an MRE?
I have not, but I know my dad has because he was in the military.
My brother, his friend, was in the Army, and he brought him MREs. I didn't have them. He didn't think they were that great.
I haven't heard, like, wonderful things, but I feel like it's kind of like being in space. Beggars can't be choosers, but, like, they're trying to do the best they can.
Right. It's good for what it is, where it has to be.
Yeah.
Early on, Ed and Harry get out of their car. And is their car a gremlin?
Yes. Okay. It looked like it, at least.
A pretty blue gremlin is what it looked like to me. They get out of the car and do a lamely fake slow walk as cars zip by in the background. This is mocking the cheap production values of these amateurs. To make a slow-mo hero walk, you have to record or film at 3 to 4 times the normal number of frames per second, then slow the playback to a normal 24 frames per second, which gives you the slow motion. High-speed cameras are very costly. They did not have the budget.
Nope.
The corpse birthday party scenario is reminiscent of the climax of the 1980 Canadian slasher movie Happy Birthday to Me. This film was produced by the same team that made My Bloody Valentine, which Jensen filmed a remake during the 2008 summer hiatus. It may also be a reference to the 1987 movie American Gothic, in which a deranged backwoods family welcomes stranded city folk into their house and then proceeds to murder and preserve / stuff them in order to make dolls to occupy an overgrown and overaged little girl named Fanny.
I mean, you want to go down that road, you can tie in House of Wax, too.
Yeah. Let's tie it all in.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it all in. Spruce says, "What's this guy Daggett's problem anyway?" And Sam says, "Loneliness." And Dean says, "What? He's never heard of real doll?" A real doll is a life-size silicone sex doll. And of course, Dean would know about it.
These next two episodes have Dean, like, hypersexual.
When's the last time he got laid?
I think, like, 4 episodes ago.
That's a while for him, Liz.
I mean, he's also, like, not one to stop self-love, I don't think.
Oh, that's true.
But, like, this episode, the next episode, he's talking all about.
This episode was nominated for a GLAAD Media Award in the Outstanding Individual Episode in a Series Without a Regular LGBT Character. That's a pretty long title for a category.
Yeah, I feel like that's one of the subcategory categories.
Yeah, but in 2009, however, it lost to an episode of The New Adventures of Old Christine. Was that the one with Julia Louis-Dreyfus?
That was, yeah.
Okay. I'm like, I don't even know if I know what that is.
Yep, that's her.
This episode marks the first time that Sam and Dean actually use profanity, the reality TV show that the Ghostfacers make. Within the narrative of the episode, it's meant to be a quote-unquote real life or a found footage film. And Sam and Dean are shown to use regular profanity, which is bleeped by the Ghostfacers. Up until season 8, episode 8, Hunteri Harisi?
Hunteri Harisi.
Okay, so I was right.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
This is the only instance in the show of strong profanity, either suggested or censored. Supernatural is a primetime show on a family channel, and therefore any profanity stronger than bitch or ass is not allowed. However, it stands to reason, and both Jared and Jensen have mentioned this on multiple occasions, that Sam and Dean, if they were real, would be much more rough around the edges and would definitely swear. And we learned what a couple episodes ago that the restrictions were lifted and they could say, screw you. That was like one of the big things. There were a couple goofs in this episode that were pointed out on IMDb. About the middle of the episode, when Corbett has been taken by the ghost, Ed is freaking out, and while he is obviously talking about him, he says the wrong name. He says, come on, guys, this is ridiculous. How in the hell is this supposed to find Corbin? I didn't notice that.
I did notice that, too. I just let it go, though.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he was just so, you know.
I thought maybe he was just being really lax with his words.
Yeah.
Slurring things together instead of, like, really enunciating the t, like Corbett.
Yeah. When Dean and Sam approach Ed and company in the house, they mention the job in West Texas. The job was in Richardson, a suburb of Dallas in the north central Texas area. There is a West Texas in the central area of the state. It's a long way from Richardson to West Texas. So what they're saying is West Texas isn't near Richardson.
Sam, come on. He didn't have a map in front of him, though.
There was a plot hole. An electromagnet that can reverse videotapes and hard drives from more than a few inches away would be too large for Dean to carry in a backpack. In addition, it would require much more power than a few D batteries. It would take more than a few minutes to erase the data, and would potentially dangerous to people in the same room. I'm not an engineer, so I don't know.
But I feel like that's a chance Dean was willing to take.
He'd be okay with it.
If something happened, he'd just be like, oh, it wasn't me.
Whatever.
You think I can build that? No.
I didn't do it. Yeah, seriously, I didn't build that. And finally, if you guys didn't know, there is a Ghostfacers web series. On IMDb, it says, after their original reality show TV pilot was destroyed by Sam and Dean Winchester, the Ghostfacers continue their quest for the supernatural in an all-new web series. The web series premiered on CWTV.com on April 15th, 2010. It's also on the Season 5 DVD. And if Supernatural Wiki has links on their Ghostfacers web series page where you can watch it online. And I can put those links in the show notes if you guys want to see it. I Googled it and found it. But it's like 10 episodes, and all together, they're like a half an hour long. So they're like 4 to 5 minutes each. It follows the case of the Showcase Slasher Face, which is at the Grand Showcase Theater, is haunted by the ghost of Janet Myers. She was an actress that was killed by her ex-husband with a razor while attending a party at the theater. And there's actually like a bonus 11th episode that came out a year later, and it's where the Ghostfacers meet Castiel.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was pretty funny.
That has to be. Oh my gosh.
It was funny because Cass comes with the book. You know how there's like the book series?
Yes.
So he comes with one of the books and he's like talking to them. He's like, you guys, you can't be these people. And they're like, yeah, we are. It was funny. So if you haven't seen the Ghostfacers web series, I'll put a link in the show notes. But it's funny. I think you should watch it.
I'll have to.
A good time. Okay. I want to hear some ghosty facts from you.
Some ghosty facts. Okay. All right. So first off, I got my information from the BBC, from sci-fi.com, from ranker.com, A Nightmare on Film Street.
Oh, I like that.
IMDb and Mental Floss.
Wait, you used IMDb too?
I had to.
Is this our first crossover?
Yeah. This is our first crossover in one episode.
I like it.
All right, so one thing I did find out is that nobody really has done any research into the history of reality paranormal television.
Really?
Yep.
Do I have to get started on it?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I kind of laid it out a little bit. I mean, I could have gone into greater detail, but it kind of like seems to start with one main thing with like tentacles before it.
Oh, it's like an octopus?
We're back to the tentacles.
Oh, shit.
But I did want to give a couple little poll information's dealing with how people perceive the paranormal and ghosts.
Okay.
So according to a 2013 Harris poll, 40% of the U.S. believe in ghosts.
Okay.
In 2005, a Gallup survey said that 3 out of 4 Americans believe in at least one paranormal belief, meaning that it's broken in and down into 41% believe in ESP, 37% believe in haunted houses, and 32% believe ghosts or spirits of the dead can come back in certain places or situations. And what they did find out is that was a survey taken in on June 16th, 2005, which you can find on news.gallup.com. And it didn't show much of any change in beliefs in the ESP, haunted houses, and ghosts coming back from 2001. So the belief stayed solid for about 4 years.
More people believe in ESP than haunted houses.
Yes.
Huh. Okay.
Now, according to the HuffPost YouGov poll from December 17th to 18th, 2012, where 1,000 adults were surveyed, 45% of Americans believe in ghosts or spirits can come back in certain places or situations. So that pretty much is believing about little less than 50% of people believe in ghosts, depending on the circumstances. Now, when you talk about paranormal television, that is defined as the genre of reality television programming, which encompasses factual investigations of paranormal phenomena, which can encompass cryptids, UFOs, ghosts, anything of that like is kind of all encompassed in the paranormal television genre.
I watched them all.
Now, the earliest the earliest kind of things that I could find go back to 1977. With the show In Search Of.
Okay.
So In Search Of aired April 17th, 1977 and ended March 1st, 1982, was hosted by Leonard Nimoy, Spock. And what it was created after a successful three-part documentary by Alan Landsberg, which was entitled In Search of Ancient Astronauts, which was in 1973. And it was so successful that it started to come out with this In Search Of. So instead of just doing it on the ancient astronauts, every episode was In Search Of this, In Search Of this. And they sent investigations into paranormal creatures and mysterious historical events. And this series was actually rebooted in 2019 with Zachary Quinto.
I've seen that one.
The next one, which you probably are familiar with.
Wait, is hold on. Did Zachary Quinto play Spock?
He did.
So it was Spock and Spock?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I like it.
I'm pretty sure that kind of had something to do with
I'm sure. I just put it together in my head. Like, wait a minute. Hold on.
I wasn't okay. going to say it, but I'm really happy you pointed it out. Because I was like, oh, do I know? I'm just going to side note it.
I'm here for you.
It's my little footnote. So the next one, which you're probably familiar of, is Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, my God. I lived on that show when I was little.
So that aired January 20th, 1987, and went all the way to 2010, was hosted by Robert Stack, even though he wasn't necessarily the original host. He was for a majority of the series. Mm-hmm. It follows a documentary format to dive into real-life mysteries, unsolved crimes, conspiracies, and paranormal phenomena. This series also just got a reboot.
I haven't watched any of the new ones. I think because I don't want to... I liked Robert Stack, so I was like, oh, he's my guy. I don't know if I want to see it with somebody else.
I know, it's really weird. So I watched the new Twilight Zone.
Okay.
Which obviously is hosted by Jordan Peele. I think he did a good job. Now, when we're talking about what we're seeing with ghost facers, it could be early traced back to the first real ghost show called Ghost Watch.
I have never heard of this.
All right, so this is actually a BBC documentary.
Okay.
Which... later, you find out it's more of a mockumentary. However, when they came out with Ghost Watch, they didn't say that it was a mockumentary, that none of it was real. They actually played it off as it was really happening. These things were going on, and they actually did a call-in line where you could call and ask questions about the investigation. And this came out in 1992, was actually billed as a drama, and aired October 31st, 1992. It quote, investigated the most haunted house in Britain. It involved 4 investigators, Michael Parkinson, Sarah Green, Mike Smith, and Craig Charles as the interviewer. And it dealt with the fictitious suburb of Fox Hill Drive, Northolt in England. And there were so many people that believed it was real that even if you told them it wasn't real, they still believed and were more terrified of anything.
Oh.
So that kind of gave way to the ghost reality shows. Now, the only two that I'm really going to focus on, and obviously I'll touch on a few more, are Ghost Hunters, because that was the first real, what we would consider paranormal reality television show. Mm-hmm. And the first episode of Ghost Hunters aired October 6, 2004 on the Sci-Fi Channel. And it starred Jason Hawes and Grant Wilson along with their team from TAPS. So TAPS, aka the Atlantic Paranormal Society, which is based in Warwick, Rhode Island, was founded in 1990.
Wow, really?
By Jason Hawes, and was originally the Rhode Island Paranormal Society, aka RIPS.
I like it.
And actually, Jason and Grant met through the RIPS website, and it was actually Grant that contacted Jason.
Oh, cool.
Because he was actually interested in improving the site and thought he could be of help.
He's like, your RIPS site sucks.
He's like, I can make it better. Some time passed, they met up at a donut shop, started notching off ideas from one another, and it ended up drifting away from the website and more towards the paranormal. And since the RIPS website received queries from all over the world, eventually, because in the first couple seasons, they're in Pennsylvania and things that kind of encompass Rhode Island, because obviously they're only going for overnight investigations.
Yeah.
They eventually changed their name to the Atlantic Paranormal Society, or TAPS. And the website receives an average of 1,000 case requests per day.
Wow. I saw the TAPS website back in the day. I couldn't even imagine how bad the RIPS website was.
Oh, man. All right. So the original TAPS team included Jason Hawes, obviously. Grant Wilson. Duh.
Avi.
Both of which were Roto-Rooter employees by day, TAPS investigators by night.
So wait, did they didn't know they weren't Roto-Rootering together previously?
They might not have been on the same team.
Okay. But then they're like, no, we have to work together all the time so we can shoot this footage.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that we got Jason, we got Grant. We added Steve Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah.
Brian Harnois.
Oh, that guy.
Donna LaCroix.
Donna.
Dave Tango. And Andy Andrews.
Dave wasn't an original member on the show.
I know. I just had to throw him in there. I don't want to forget about it.
You can add it. I mean, it wasn't that far into it that he joined, because they actually went and did a case with him, and then he started being on the show.
I know. I love him. I just wanted to make sure he got included because I didn't put him in the notes anywhere. So, Tango.
I know you knew all that information. I just had to spit it out because I knew something.
Grant ended up leaving the show in 2012. There have been multiple spinoffs, a couple realities and specials, but they're no longer Jason and Grant. So actually, the Ghost Hunters happened because of a New York Times article on Halloween 2002. The New York Times published an article on Plumber's Paranormal Investigators and their team of RIPS. Soon, the article went viral. And they began getting requests from TV producers Craig Pilgin, who runs Pilgrim Films and Television, who apparently made an offer they could not refuse. Basically, he was saying that they wanted to create a show about paranormal investigators who were obviously plumbers by day. Weird Mario flex there, but okay.
I was just going to say that.
He basically said he didn't want to change them. He just wanted to make them bigger. And if they didn't do it, somebody else would.
Oh, he had to put that in there, did he?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're not going to do it, I'm just going to go find the next paranormal scene.
I mean, by how popular it is, he wasn't that far off.
Yeah, it's true.
Now, Grant, even though they're ghost hunters, does not like to be called a Ghostbuster.
Yeah, I don't think I like to be called a Ghostbuster either.
In fact, he is quoted as saying, "We can disprove over 80% of the cases we investigate. For that reason alone, we like to be referred to as investigators because we are spending more time investigating the people in their situation than actually busting ghosts."
That's what I liked about them, is they tried to disprove things and not automatically went to, this is an actual haunting or, you know, whatever.
No, they were actually, that was one of the things that I also liked about them, is instead of going in and trying to prove that the paranormal was real.
Right.
Which is what Ghost Adventures does. Ghost Hunters try to disprove everything.
Right.
And if they can't disprove it, then necessarily they'll go from there to try and make sure that what they're seeing is right.
Right. And they wouldn't necessarily say something was a haunting. They'd be like, well, you have some things that are happening, but can we say that's a haunting? I'm not sure.
Now, the Ghost Hunters, if you watched the very first couple of seasons, prioritized cases that involved children.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime that a child was in distress or a family was suffering, they would take that over some big named haunting. They would always ask what kind of activity is going on. Are there children involved? Because if there's children involved, that goes right to the front of the list for them. Because obviously they're all fathers.
Steve's a cat dad.
Well, I mean, the Jason and Grant, the ones that actually call the shots.
Add that in there.
Now, one of the things that the ghost hunters did for a lot of people was kind of normalize paranormal experiences and also give a safe space for people to talk about them. Because obviously there were more ghost movies meant to scare people.
Right.
And less of a, I went through that, how do you help me? Because some people can get so haunted by a ghost or a specter that they almost form a sense of like PTSD.
Right.
But it gave them a safe space to kind of try and find and talk about people. And also gave the way, because since they're transatlantic, they had team members readily available to help people in every space. And it actually gave rise to a lot more paranormal investigative groups, which you'd later go on to see at the Travel Channel and such, such as 2008 basically kind of like saw a rise in ghost-centric shows. That's when Ghost Whisperer and Medium came out. There's actually a woman named Patty Starr, who is the founder of the Lexington, Kentucky's Ghost Chasers International. And she actually credits ghost hunters on Sci-Fi for kind of letting people take them more seriously.
Yeah.
And not just be like, okay, sure, you hunt ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
They I like that's ghost, more credit.
Ghost chasers, like ghost facers. Ghost chasers.
Now, here's my little tidbit of information.
You have a tiddly bit?
I do have a tiddly bit.
Oh, this is so exciting.
I know. All right. So do you know who is a fan of Ghost Hunters?
Me.
Yes. Have you appeared in two episodes?
Have I? Meatloaf.
Yes. Meatloaf is a fan of the series and actually appeared in two episodes. In 2009, during season 5, there was actually an episode entitled Bat Out of Hell, where Meatloaf actually joined in on the investigation in Thousand Island, New York. Mm-hmm. He would later go on return for another episode in 2010, and he actually contacted his agent and had his agent contact the show.
That's so because funny.
He wanted to be on it. And actually, Meatloaf also not only talked to his agent, but he also emailed the TAPS website. So Meatloaf has perused the TAPS website.
Meatloaf's been on the website. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Sent an email like, hey, Jason, this is Meatloaf. And they're like, okay.
All right. So because there's been spinoffs of Ghost Hunters, there was Ghost Academy, where they were in search of their newest paranormal investigator, which Adam Berry was a cadet on, who eventually went on to win his spot to join Ghost Hunters.
And has his own show now. Well, with Amy. It's not his own show, but they have a show.
Exactly. So Kindred Spirit, starring Amy Brody and Adam Berry, actually was a spinoff that came from an episode of Ghost Hunters. It was the episode where they actually investigated Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Louisville, Kentucky. Bruni is quoted as saying, we were connecting with the nurses there. We really wanted to do something more than just acknowledge their presence and then kind of leave them in their space. And we couldn't do it at that time. Barry would then go on to say, it's the sensitive side of ghost hunting. It's kind of healing that confusion about what's happening to me and why do I feel this way. We wanted to help families only and give them a solution as to what's happening in the house. And that's how the idea for Kindred Spirits came about, was during an episode of Ghost Hunters.
I like that.
One of the things you do see in a lot of ghost shows that kind of started in Ghost Hunters is the idea of the skeptic, because you know the people watching your show are going to be a skeptic regardless. So why not have your own skeptic? Do you know who their skeptic is?
No, I don't.
Steve.
Steve's the skeptic?
Steve is their skeptic.
Really?
Yes. He's actually quoted as saying, what most people don't realize is that I don't think there's any bigger skeptic than myself.
I feel like I don't know Steve as well as I thought I did. I'm a little taken aback right now.
Now, he admits that ghost hunters aren't scientists, but they do take a scientific approach to their investigations. But he always goes in with a skeptic kind of mind.
Okay, and he goes into an investigation, but he's not necessarily like a full-blown I don't believe in.
No. And one of the last things that I had a feeling, but I didn't know was a thing dealing with ghost hunters is that TAPS actually doesn't charge people to investigate their reported hauntings,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was awesome.
They're pretty nice guys.
Well, and also any expenses that arise during the investigation are actually covered by the team. So, like I said before, That's not the only one. The most popular hunting show, along with all of its other facets, is Ghost Adventures. I'm sorry. I feel like I needed to have like that good pregnant pause to like build suspension, even though everybody knows. All right. So Ghost Adventures actually didn't start as a series. It actually started as a movie.
Yep.
That was a documentary which aired July 25th, 2007 on Sci-Fi, and then October 17th, 2008 on the Travel Channel. It starred three investigators, Zach Baggins and his team, Nick Groff and Aaron Goodwin. The funniest part is I'm doing these notes, and when I was doing these notes, I'm like, Zach Baggins, Nick Groff, and his team, Aaron Goodwin. I'm just like doing it in their voices.
His equipment tech, Aaron Goodwin.
Like, yeah, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I can't get it on my, okay. All right. And their documentary actually took place in Virginia City, Nevada, because you see that a lot with like a lot of the pilot episodes of these is that they don't have the money, so they can't travel very far. So you look at Ghost Hunters, they traveled kind of around what's satellited Rhode Island.
Yeah.
Because I mean, their first two episodes are in Pennsylvania. And then you look at Ghost Adventures. Well, they're in Nevada. So they're obviously investigating Nevada. Now, I only found on one site this, so don't quote me on this actually being full fact because I couldn't find anything else to back it up. However, it was said that this documentary won the 2006 Grand Jury Prize for Best Documentary at the New York International Independent Film and Video Festival.
Let's call Zach up and ask him.
Yo, Zach, I know you're a little busy with your haunted museum and stuff.
And you're Holly Madison, but...
I saw something the other day that was like, look at Holly Madison and our laid-back... Killer Clowns from Outer Space t-shirt and this going to another thing with an outfit. And I was like, she probably just came from Zach Baggins' house. Are you fucking kidding me?
I like when she posts on Instagram that she's wearing his shirt. Like she has a nickname for him. I can't recall it right now, but she's like, I'm in my boy's shirt right now. I can wear his long sleeves because it's chilly outside.
They're like my favorite couple.
I know, they're too cute.
And like, obviously I wanted to marry Zach Baggins, but if I can't,
everybody?
Who best? I have his stupid book. I remember reading it by candlelight in a bubble bath. That's where I was at. You're all welcome. Now we're all best friends.
Do we just become best friends?
I think we just did.
Because I told everybody I had a dream about Steve Gonzalez, and then you're telling us about your Zach Baggins bubble bath. Oh my God, I'm writing it down.
Now,
Zach Baggins bubble bath.
Now, Jason wasn't always a huge believer. He actually didn't start seeing paranormal apparitions until he was about 20. In
who?
That's kind of how Jason. So back to Ghost Hunters.
Oh, okay. I'm like, wait a minute, we were talking about Zach Baggins.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because I'm comparing the leaders.
Oh,
so Jason didn't start seeing apparitions until he was about 20. However, if you read Zach Baggins' book, and he's more than welcome to just like spit it out himself, because you know he will, he has been a firm believer since he was a kid. Mm-hmm. And that's actually what kind of inspired him to start exploring the areas around him. Because he believed that there are spirits that have been guiding him and protecting him, which you'll hear in the opening of Ghost Adventures, ever since he was a kid. And he'll full on tell everybody that, like, just because they experience it on camera doesn't mean they don't experience it off camera. Their paranormal experiences continue after the cameras stop rolling, which I feel like he also kind of just brings upon himself. I mean, the man bought pretty much a haunted museum and then keeps putting haunted things in the museum.
Yeah. All the scariest items you could ever think of.
I mean, you watch Ghost Adventures Aftershocks, you hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch, is it Haunted Objects?
Haunted Artifacts? Something like that.
Obviously that's in the haunted museum and him doing stuff there. So I feel like he kind of just like brings on he also locked himself down. He locked himself and his workers down in the haunted museum.
Yeah.
To do an investigation.
And he has, like, storage lockers upon storage lockers of haunted artifacts.
Mm-hmm. And he just keeps buying new things.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I mean, what was the last thing he freaking bought?
Wasn't it the rocking chair?
I know he bought the murder house. Charlie Manson's murder house.
I thought that he put that back up for sale, though.
Maybe he did. He bought that in 2019. The La Bianca murder house.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what else. He bought something like real wild the other day.
We can't keep up on Zach's wild purchases. I mean, he already has Peggy. He has the,
he has the Dybbuk box.
The Kevorkian van. The Lugosi mirror.
He also apparently spent like $300,000 on Ghostbusters items.
Like, oh, really?
The movie, yeah. Obviously, Ghost Adventures has not only continued from when it launched in 2007, it is now exclusively on Discovery Plus.
Ugh! Let's not talk about it. Which, by the way, since I got Discovery Plus, only one new episode has come out. It's been 3 weeks.
Well, according to the Ghost Adventures, it has allowed them to produce some more original content and is actually going to definitely expand what they're doing in their investigations.
Still not happy about it.
And they apparently aim to put out more kinds of new non-episode specific content. And apparently, Zach Bagans doesn't like to leave any stone unturned or flipped over. He likes to check it all again. He is really big on going back to certain locations.
Uh-huh.
So, obviously, the most recent one is the Cecil Hotel.
Did you watch it?
I haven't, because I don't have Discovery Plus.
Oh, well, I will give you my login, and so will Nikki. So,
Ghost Adventures was one of the first ghost paranormal reality shows that gave us an insight to actual demonic possession in places such as the Demon House in Gary, Indiana. Zach Bagans experienced demonic possession.
That's another thing he owns. Well, mm-hmm. Owned before he tore it down and then took the staircase in the dirt.
Yep. The other places that they will never revisit because of certain situations were Goatman's Bridge in Denton, Texas, and the McRaven Mansion in Vicksburg, Mississippi.
They won't go back.
Which is ironic because, like, he'll go back to Pavaglia Island.
Yeah, what happened at McRaven Mansion? I don't remember anything. Like, Goatman's Bridge, that's where, isn't that where Aaron got, like, thrown?
It is. That was, well, that's also the one that Zach wasn't feeling very good. I'm trying to do quick research with
Adventures.
No, it's cool. I didn't think about that. I was like, yeah, sure.
You didn't think I was going to ask you that question?
No.
Because was it McRaven? Wasn't that when they did part of the town? Like when they were doing the whole Vicksburg?
Ooh, McRaven Mansion. All right. So that was the part of the siege of Vicksburg.
Mm-hmm.
They got an EVP that says, "I came to die."
Oh.
Yep. Zach began to feel a constant state of aggression and rage. Something grabbed Jay's waist and Aaron's leg at the same time. Spirit Box said, Jay, with an unexplained female scream, and then said, "Tonight." Jay became extremely affected by the entity, experiencing pains throughout. Oh, Jai. Sorry, Jai, not Jay. Through a body. Oh, apparently McRaven. Was that the breakup? Maybe it was after this. Sorry, you're going to have a lot of shit to edit out.
That's fine. I suppose I see the big things of silence. I just automatically go in and... It's pretty smart. Easy to take out.
Wicked smart. Aaron began to feel numbness and pain in his arms.
I'm going to have to go back and watch this because I don't remember any of that happening.
Hmm. When they enter Mr. French's bedroom, they discover the lamp to be off the table and on the floor, pieces of brick on the floor, and a table in a place it shouldn't be.
Hmm.
And apparently a lot of stuff happens to Jay.
You know what the problem is that the shows now are going to the same places. So it's like, I think about one and I can't remember what happened in the other. Like the guys from Tennessee Wraith Chasers went there when they did Haunted Towns, which is around the same time that this came out. So I can't remember this episode.
So I know you heard me talk about Nightmare on Film Street and also Ranker. So I wanted to give you both these lists of the top 10, what they deem to be paranormal reality television shows.
Okay.
All right. So we will start with, which one do you want, Ranker or Nightmare on Film Street?
Nightmare on Film Street.
All right. So Nightmare on Film Street, which also has a podcast.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going to do theirs in reverse order because they start at number 10. Number 10, Paranormal State.
Okay.
Obviously, that's Ryan Buell. That was set in Penn State. With the Pennsylvania State University Paranormal Research Society, which was a student-led college club. Then you have number 9, Celebrity Paranormal Project.
Okay.
That was on VH1, in case you were curious. It was only about a year long. Number 8, we have BuzzFeed Unsolved Supernatural.
Oh, I haven't watched that yet.
That one is Ghost Hunting with a Side of Humor, and stars Ryan Bergara and a skeptic, Shane Majar.
The, um, not... not to interrupt you, but I'm totally going to interrupt you. The Celebrity Paranormal Project, wasn't Bridget Marquardt on that?
Mm-hmm.
I literally just rewatched that on the internet like a couple months ago, all the episodes.
Now, I know some people are going to be like, but Liz, I know you said Ghost Hunters was like 2004. There was a show that kind of came out, but it didn't gain nearly as much traction or really lead towards paranormal reality television show. However, they have number 7 as most haunted.
Ah, Call!
Which again was another BBC.
I love that show.
Mm-hmm. Starring Yvette and Carl.
Yes! No, she didn't call him Carl. No. Call! I loved Yvette.
They have number 6, and I didn't know this existed, but now I'm going to go find it and watch it. Dead Famous Ghostly Encounters.
I've heard of it, but I've never watched it.
So this is another British show, and it stars skeptic Gail Porter and clairvoyant Chris Fleming as they search through American landscapes in order to find the ghosts of Frank Sinatra, Bing Crosby, Nat King Cole, James Dean, Lucille Ball, Jim Morrison, Bonnie Parker and Clyde Barrow, Marilyn Monroe, and John Wayne.
Chris Fleming makes his way around these ghost hunter shows.
All right, miss, this is for you. Number 5, Ghost Asylum.
Yes. I'll have to say, I watched Ghost Asylum for Chris. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie about it. He's an attractive man who just happens to hunt ghosts.
With the Tennessee Wraith Chasers, which is just like a badass name.
And then they started off doing is they were trying to not capture the ghost, but like take the ghost out of there in like some kind of containment device, which is a good idea. It never worked, but it was still fun to watch.
Number 4, we have Ghost Lab.
Okay, I've watched that.
Then we have number 3. They put Ghost Hunters at number 3, followed very quickly on the heels of number 2, Ghost Nation.
That's kind of like the same thing, though.
With Ghost Adventures as number 1.
Ghost Lab was above some of the other ones, really?
Mm-hmm. All right, so that was the list from Nightmare on Film Street.
Okay.
So, Ranker is a little bit different. All right. This one I don't agree with, but okay, we'll go with it. All right, like I said, this is going to be in opposite orders. We're going to start at 1 and go to 10.
So, best to worst.
Best to worst instead of worst to best.
Okay.
Best. They have number 1, A Haunting.
Really?
That was what I thought. I just don't like, I guess my problem is when I think reality TV, I'm thinking adventures and like investigations. I'm not thinking reenactments and storytelling, which I mean, they're pretty much the same thing. So I guess it makes sense, but.
Yeah, I don't think, I never thought that show was real.
I mean, I didn't either, but I mean, I watched it. I mean, I still watch it sometimes.
Yeah,
I don't search it out, but.
I'm not going to say if it's on, I'm not going to turn it off, but I always thought that was more of like fiction, or if it was based on reality, but it was definitely like actors retelling stories.
Yeah. So if you look at it, it's more like anthology docudrama. So whatever you want to put that on your paranormal reality TV show list. Okay, Ranker.
Not even in my top 10.
Number 2, Ghost Adventures.
Okay.
Number 3, Paranormal Witness.
See, that's another one.
But I think that's tying into the idea of things like unsolved mysteries in search of.
Okay, so it's not what you think of as paranormal reality.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't think you'd like think of like mysteries of the unknown.
Yeah,
as a paranormal reality show, but it technically is.
Yeah. Okay.
Number 4, we have Paranormal Lockdown.
Okay.
Nick Groff and Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
Number 5, we have The Dead Files, which I actually really like.
I do like that show.
That one I will sometimes seek out.
Yeah.
Here you go. Number 6. Not what you would consider a paranormal reality TV show, but you're going to be a fan of Destination Truth.
Yes, Josh Gates.
He makes their list at number 6.
I love all Josh Gates' stuff.
Number 7, we have Ghost Hunters.
They're all the way down there at number 7.
Number 8, we have My Ghost Story Caught on Camera.
Okay.
Number 9, we have Kindred Spirits.
Okay.
And number 10... Forgot about this show, but I also used to watch it a lot. Haunted Collector.
Oh, yeah. What happened to that show?
I definitely used to watch Haunted Collector a lot. Which is crazy because it's not like it stopped. It aired in 2011 and it just kept going.
Those are some good lists. I don't know if I necessarily agree with the second list.
In case you're curious, Unsolved Mysteries is number 11 on Ranker.
Oh, so just didn't make the cut.
Just right below. If you just tossed out anything that wasn't real, that we consider, because then it goes into Paranormal State, Ghost Hunters International, Ghost Asylum, Scariest Places on Earth.
Ghost Hunters International.
And then you get into My Haunted House, Haunted Highway, Haunted Towns. My favorite, When Ghosts Attack.
Haunted Towns, that's the Tennessee Wraith Chasers too.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't I say that? Wraith?
Your Ghost Brothers made it at 26.
What about Ghost Brothers? What's the one now? Home? Something Home? Where they come and stay in your house?
I don't see them. I got Deep South Paranormal. That's number 34.
Oh, what's that?
I don't know, but Long Island Media made the cut.
Oh my God.
41.
Seriously?
Oh, that she's ahead of Ghost Adventures Aftershocks.
Wow.
Wow. Surviving Death is number 43. Well, that's a stab at something that people are obsessed with. So there you have it.
I like it. I like it all. Now I just keep thinking about Chris from Tennessee Wraith Chasers.
I'm glad I could leave you on that good a note. But yeah, I literally tried to search things, and man, nobody's done like almost any kind of history on paranormal television besides things like, I mean, obviously you grew up with things with Ghost Hunters and classic Ghost Hunters, which make an appearance in Supernatural. Scooby-Doo. OG paranormal reality television right there.
Hello, Scooby-Doo.
Dude, I love Scooby-Doo so much. But paranormal reality television differs in things such as like Ghostbusters and Scooby-Doo. And apparently something called Rent-A-Ghost.
What?
Apparently Rent-A-Ghost. The Brits get all the good stuff.
Seriously?
So Rent-A-Ghost is a British children's television comedy show that ran on the BBC from January 6th, 1976 to November 6th, 1984. And it centered around the antics of a number of ghosts who worked for a firm called Rent-A-Ghost, who rent out ghosts for various tasks. I would watch that.
I'm Googling this.
I would totally watch that.
After dinner, I'm going to find it on the internet.
I would totally watch something like this.
Heck yeah.
There's literally, there's a ghost on here called from the Wild West called Catastrophe Kate.
Oh my God, look at that. There it is.
Mm-hmm. And the head of the company, which is apparently located in South Ealing, is run by Fred Mumford.
Does he have sons?
He only has a couple of people who work under him named Timothy Claypool, who is a mischievous jester with a comical lack of knowledge about modern technology, and Hubert Davenport, who is a Victorian era gentleman.
My God, I see the pictures of them. Okay, definitely gonna dig more into this later.
You're welcome. We got Scooby-Doo, they got Rent-A-Ghost.
I feel like from these pictures, I feel like we were winning, but still gonna watch it.
Classic.
When you said classic, I thought you were talking about classic Ghost Hunters that's on FYI every Monday.
I mean, that too. I mean, I have the first, I think I have like at least up to season 3 of both Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures on DVD. I could watch them at any time. And I don't know why I bought them. But
I know why you did, because it's awesome.
Now I can go back and watch like Jason and Grant fix somebody's sink, go right into ghost hunting in Pennsylvania. Go on
an investigation. There's something like 27 seasons of Ghost Adventures. That's not counting all the like the side. Also,
you got the side movies. You got like the special like 2-hour investigations on Halloween and.
I watched that when I went through when I got Hulu and I started because I don't know, I just rewatched the same shit, but I actually sat there and watched like the 4-hour Halloween specials. There's 6-hour Halloween specials. I don't know why I watched them again, but I did.
Oh, I DVR'd that when it aired.
I stayed up
and would go back
it.
And watch. If I couldn't, I would DVR it. If I didn't, I was tweeting at it.
Oh, I didn't have a Twitter then.
Oh, I did. I think I did it just for that.
Started Twitter just to tweet at Zach Bagans and Ghost Adventures. Hey, Nick Groff.
I'm pretty sure I tweeted at Zach Bagans when he bit the big one reading that poem during the Valentine's Day episode. When he brews that fine behind.
Oh my God. I love that. I always loved when he talked to the lady ghosts. He gets so into it. And when he didn't know the difference between an incubus and a succubus, which I didn't either until that episode, but I wasn't a ghost person then. So I think you should do a little research, Zach Bagans.
I feel like, yeah, if you're going in there, you should have already done your research. I think that's one of the reasons that I liked the Dead Files, because obviously she goes in to do the paranormal investigation side and he goes out and does the actual like fact investigations.
Mm-hmm. You know what's another good new one? Have you watched the Holzer Files?
Mm-mm.
They take Hans Holzer's old cases and they reinvestigate them.
Ooh.
And it's Dave Schrader and I forget the girl's name, but she's like a psychic kind of dealer. She's been on other ghost shows.
No, I haven't heard of this, but now I'm curious.
It's good. We watched one the other day, and Dave Schrader got attacked.
What?
Yeah. Like, he was in this little apartment house on the back of this house that was haunted, and they didn't tell him any stories about this little shack in the back, so he set up, like, their base thing there, and he was watching the two investigators, and he, like, heard something upstairs.
That was Command Center Zero, Eagle's Nest.
Eagle's Nest. He was in the Eagle's Nest, and, like, something came down the stairs and, like, pushed him out of a chair. It was crazy. And he, like, ran.
Ghost hunting is not something to mess with. Don't fuck with your ghosts.
No.
Don't do Ouija boards. Don't fuck with your ghosts.
Oh, no to the Ouija board. Kids, don't.
Don't do it.
It's never a good idea. Okay, well, I had a lot of fun during this episode. I just want to throw that out there. I was entertained.
Well, it helped because, like, we're both really into the paranormal and stuff. So, like, this was just, like, right up our alley.
I know.
And, it was just funny. It
felt so comfortable talking about it.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm sitting here writing the names and I'm just going in my head with the Ghost Adventures opening, where I'm just like, these are our ghost adventures. Oh my God. All right. So next episode, we will be in March.
Oh my God. We will be.
Wow. And we will be talking season 3, episode 14, Long Distance Call. But not so long distance, because it takes place in Ohio.
Oh, so not long distance for us.
Not long distance for us at all. No. Okay. But thank you guys so much for listening to us.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed this episode, and go watch your favorite paranormal TV show. And if you notice something in this episode that we did not that compares to a paranormal television show, please let us know.
Yeah. Tell us your favorite one. Do you agree with the lists that Liz gave?
Is there one we're missing? Because I'm always looking for new paranormal shows.
Oh, yeah. If there's one that you know of that we haven't heard of yet, pass it along. Because I need, apparently, more ghosty shows in my life.
Yeah. I mean, I was really hoping the Robert Englund True Terror would fill that hole. But,
oh, yeah.
But I did get excited today because Beyond the Unknown was on, aka Mysteries at the Museum.
Don Wildman has the same show 6 times, but it's different things.
No, and that's the crazy part. No. Like, the entire opening, like, I was sitting here and I didn't even, I wasn't watching it. It's around the wall that I can't see, but I had it turned up so I could listen to it. Like a podcast before there were podcasts. Like, we don't live in a world of podcasts. Yeah. But he's doing his opening and I'm sitting here like, okay, da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, Mysteries at the Museum. He goes, Beyond the Unknown. And I was like, damn it, I thought I was right.
But he
should have known. It's the new one.
Literally have the same show. It's just called a different thing.
Yeah, there's 3. It's Mysteries at the Museum, Beyond the Unknown, which are essentially the same thing, and then we go outside, and it's Monumental Mysteries. Mysteries,
yeah. I mean, I watched them all.
Me too. I'll say I'm knocking it, but I watched them all.
Just saying, they're all the same show.
Don Wildman is, to me, like, Josh Gates is for you.
Oh, yeah. I do love some Josh Gates. Josh Gates is funny, though, too. Not that Don Wildman isn't.
I mean, I don't think he plays to be funny.
But I just...
Unless he trips over something in the museum, I don't think Don Wildman's going to be funny.
Josh Gates it makes it really interesting to learn about random shit. I don't even know. Anything he talks about.
See, and that's why I think, like, I wouldn't say it's Don Wildman for me, but it's definitely what they're doing.
The show. Yes. Yeah.
Like, earlier it was the Titanic and they had the violin.
Yeah. Did you notice, though, lately, as, like, this whatever one you're watching goes on, that it's, like, really slim how they kind of tie these things together?
Yeah.
You're kind of like, that has nothing to do with that story, but it was, like, in the same room as something that happened, you know?
It was in the room where it happened.
Exactly.
That's how it was. It has more access to that than Aaron Burr did. That's saying a lot. I think on that note, we should probably leave.
Oh my gosh. Okay, we're done. Okay. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
If you want to send us a DM, send us an email.
If you want to see our faces, follow us on Instagram. If you don't, follow us on Twitter.
We have a Buy Us a Coffee, aka Buy Us a Beer, if you really like to show our podcast some love.
We love you.
We do. There's Loki.
He loves you too.
He did. He heard love and he's like, I'm here for it.
I'm here for all the love. Okay, everybody.
Thank you. And
thank you.
Bye.
You've been listening to Balls, a Supernatural podcast with Lizzie and Missy. If you want more, follow on Twitter and Instagram at SBN Balls Pod or email sbnballspod@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe and follow Balls on your favorite streaming service.